Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 25, and this week's guest, we have Amy Davis. She comes to talk with us about some projects that she has going on and her driftwood cameras. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 25, and we have Andrew, who so graciously joined us from Berlin, back from Berlin. How was your trip, Andrew?
It was great, thanks. Yes, we got back about 1 a.m. in the morning, so we had a really long day. But, you know, four-day breaks in the city, you've got to make the most of it, and it was three nights. So we had early flight to Berlin, and then we had late return. So we got pretty much four full days, and I wandered around with the Terrapin camera and the Reality So Subtle camera.
Nice.
Color and black and white. Yeah, it was great.
Awesome.
Really, really good. Yeah. So here we are. We're getting old, aren't we? Episode 25.
25. Clicking right along. Just seems like yesterday. Weird.
Well, I've been in contact with Mark, your old... your old partner in crime, and we hopefully can line him up to get back on the show and fill us in on what he's been up to since he abandoned the podcast. Yeah. So 25, but we'll soon be caught up by that new kid on the block, Mr. Neil Piper, who's got his Sooty and Sweet show. S&M I'm going to call it. But you know, he's putting out a show a bit like Gutterman, you know, sort of every day.
But
we believe in quality over quantity. Yeah.
That is why we have this week's guest with us.
Did you see the way I teed you up there?
That was so nice. I really appreciate it.
We've been planning on having Amy on. Everybody knows Amy from Instagram as photomom1234, right?
Yep. Hi, everybody.
Yeah. So,
hello, Amy.
We finally got her on. We finally got it worked out so she can come, and we're excited to have you here.
I'm happy to be here. I really appreciate you guys asking me to have me on.
Cool. That's very good. So, no, I've been an admirer of your work for some time, and although I'd prefer to call you Photo Mother 1234, that's okay.
that is fine.
That photo mom thing, that MOM thing,
that was just less I had to type. So.
You know how that is. Yeah, that's true.
So, Amy, why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself?
And, sure.
We'll stop you.
Okay.
Try and steer you.
Hey, I would appreciate that. Thank you. Sometimes I need some guidance. I live here in central Illinois, and I never really took photography classes in school. I hear a lot of people's stories about, you know, taking pinhole classes and whatnot, but I never had the opportunity to do that. I always kept just a cheap point and shoot with me when I went on road trips. I was in sports and whatnot. But it wasn't until after my first child was born that I got my first DSLR. And, you know, yeah, I know.
No, come on. No.
I kind of went that route. And, you know, like a lot of new moms, I just was taking a ton of pictures and I loved it. And it wasn't until after my second child was born a couple years later that I realized that I liked it more than just taking the pictures. I liked learning about it. I just liked the whole experience of it. And so about that time is when I decided I wanted to get a little bit more serious with it. And then, you know, kind of how your typical, well, here, come take my family pictures and come take my family pictures. And that's kind of how it started. But after a while, there was something missing for me. And I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And then I kind of realized that trying to get these pictures perfect was starting to stress me out a little bit. And so I have kind of moved away from that a bit. Of course, I don't have a lot of time in my schedule with my husband's work and whatnot to take on, you know, take shoots here and there. So
photo jobs.
Exactly. And so I just decided, you know what, this maybe just isn't my path in life right now. I just want to do something different. And I don't even know how I found it, but Jonathan Canlis's Film Is Not Dead book. I got a hold of one of those, and it was like, wow, this whole new world. I mean, and I shot film prior, but looking at it differently really just opened up a whole new world. And so I just started experimenting with, well, you know, all sorts of film cameras. I kind of felt I just wanted to try them all.
So the kids, Amy, sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
The kids went without shoes and, they went to school with like newspaper on their soles. Oh, yeah, but mum's got a new Leica.
Exactly. No, we made sure that we kind of did, you know, a little bit of both. Shoes here, maybe a camera here, one or two. But it was fun. And it was a couple years ago when I discovered pinhole photography.
Yeah. It seems like I remember talking to you shortly after that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Maybe you had asked me about the realities, or I can't remember something, or it was shortly after you got your undo and you were like,
right.
What's going on with this?
He clearly ignored you, which is the best thing to do, I find, and bought an undo.
Well, I didn't, you know, when I first started, of course, I tried to make my own, and that was a complete failure. So I decided that that's not what I'm supposed to be doing. I'd rather, you know, concentrate more just on making the exposures versus trying to make something. I'm just not good at it.
Right.
So the Ondu popped up, and I decided to give it a try. And yeah, and that's when I started connecting with some of the other pinhole photographers that I was finding. But it was also hard for me, at least at that time, to know where direction to turn to learn about pinhole photography, because I'd never been exposed. You know, I'm 44, so in high school, you know, I never had any of that.
Right.
And so yeah, so I reached out to you and bought my first Ondu, and it was the 135 model. Mm-hmm. And I struggled with that because I was missing frames. And,
yeah, I remember you talking about it.
Yeah.
The Ondu had I think they had two Kickstarters. They had a version one and a version two.
Yeah. See, I came in after the Kickstarters.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was all done and they were funded and everything. And, and when I got the 135, I was missing so many frames, and I was just really not wanting to be discouraged in that. But at the same time, I was kind of hooked, right? I was like, this was fun. So I sold it and I got a 6x6, and I haven't looked back.
Yeah. I think that 35 millimeter is not the ideal format.
Right. Well, at that time, I mean, honestly, it was the cheapest route for me to go.
Sure.
To try to find a good quality pinhole, at least that I could find. You know, like I said, I was new to the world. I didn't know about the reality so subtles. I didn't know about terrapins. I didn't know about any of that. So, you know, Ondu was one of the first ones that I had seen. And it was the cheapest model, you know, like you said, Andrew, my kids need shoes. So I had to go with that route. And I kind of decided, yeah, that one wasn't for me.
Pesky kids, hey?
I know, right? What are you going to do? So I went with the 6x6 and I love it.
That's it.
It was interesting, your comments about wanting to get things really perfect. I was listening to the negative positives. I think it was maybe their recent episode, the midweek, where Mike was actually saying something very interesting. I nearly said for a change. We love you, Mike. And he said that his photography either gears these days towards the very high end, you know, so he's been using his Pentax 6-7 like I do and other cameras. You know, I make darkroom prints. Or the very lo-fi. And the problem he finds is in the middle. And maybe that was most people's experience of shooting film in the old days, because most folks just had a, you know, a point and shoot or something similar, and the pictures were, you know.
Right.
Okay. So you come back into film and your memories are of that. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a while to, well, actually there's this whole other world of crap cameras and pinhole and looking at things slightly differently.
Right.
So I can see why you're drawn to it.
Yeah. And exactly, you know, just looking at something different, and it's not even truly like the end result. It's the whole process of it that I've just really fallen in love with. you know, not knowing if my composition is going to be perfect, not knowing if I'm even going to get it right.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, gosh, there could be a flare coming in. I have no idea. But it's then at the end when everything else, it's all kind of like come together. And that's just what nails it for me.
Well, that's what I liked about when I first got my Reality 6x6 was I could take it everywhere with me. You know, I mean, that was using my kids and my daily scene everywhere I went. That, you know, that was when my son Henry was, you know, 2 or 3. And so, like, I was staying home with him and the kids, and I didn't go anywhere without, you know, a pinhole camera and a 2-year-old, you know, so it kind of worked out good for that, because that, you know, I mean, I could just kind of use it as my, you know, using to document my daily life and not having to, you know, use a 35 millimeter or a big medium format camera.
I think I need to go and steal a child. So let me just put that into context before I get into
I'm sure you could have found one when you were in Berlin. Come on, Andrew. There's plenty in Berlin, aren't there?
Yeah, we didn't go to those areas. My babies are 22 and 20. And when I was photographing those guys, it was with my Olympus OM-1. And I don't think the world of pinhole wasn't even on my radar then. But I can, and certainly, you know, I was reading your blog site, Amy, Life from Behind the Open Brackets Film, Close Brackets Camera blog.
Yeah.
Which I love.
And well, thank you.
Yeah. I apologize for only just, you know, I have blogs, other folks have them, and they're not the way that most people seem to communicate with each other these days. It's always sort of Instagram or Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lovely to just dive back into something and slow down and look into, you know, get to know a photographer a little bit. And so I'd commend Amy's blog to listeners out there.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate that.
You're very welcome. And putting your all into a personal project, that was the first, I think that's your most recent post from earlier yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe this is September the 8th as we record this, I think.
Uh-huh.
And
all day.
So you want to just share some of your thoughts on personal projects, and I think you touched on it, but keeping that camera with you.
Oh, goodness. I tell you, I'm just a big believer in having a personal project. It doesn't, I always tried to do it even in my digital quote unquote life when I was taking on some families and whatnot. But just shooting for me and, you know, really nobody else, just for me has just been, it's been a good balance in my life. You know, I have 5 kids. And my oldest is 14 and my youngest is 3. So
it's your hands full.
Well, it's very much, yes. It's somewhat chaotic, but it's a good chaos. But I need that balance sometimes. And so that's what I do with my personal projects.
I'm surprised you have time for personal projects.
Well, to be honest, Andrew, I don't have a lot of time, but that's why I keep the camera with me. So if I'm going to the grocery store and the kids are complaining because I might be taking a little extra time, it's because for 15 minutes I've hopped downtown and, you know, got off a few exposures before I headed over to the grocery store. So that's kind of where it's at. And, you know, with my husband's work schedule, sometimes, you know, I might get an hour or so, but I take a couple of my girls with me. They really like shooting film too. Cool. And, but this project, right now that I'm doing currently is about my hometown in, Chillicothe, Illinois.
Oh, I was going to ask you how to pronounce that, because I've written it down and had no idea.
Yeah.
Chillicothe.
Yeah. And that's, you know, a lot of people don't. But I live in Chillicothe, Illinois.
I don't even know where Illinois is, but anyway, that's another story.
Right in, almost in the middle.
In the middle.
Of it. Yeah. We bordered the Mississippi.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Boy, that must be a long river.
Very much. Yes. Yeah, yes, it is.
It's pretty long.
But it's a small town, you know, 6,000 people. And I grew up here. I live just right outside of town. And, you know, sometimes small towns, they don't necessarily get good vibes, you know, from people. Everybody wants to grow up and go to this city or whatever. And what I was finding was that I really enjoy my hometown, and it doesn't matter if it's small. I'm finding that I'm doing a lot of stuff with my kids here that I enjoyed when I was a kid. So my goal with this was to, you know, how can I document my town, but kind of in a different light, or using a different lens, so to speak, even though it's, you know, a pinhole, you know, to get others to see it in a different way that might evoke some type of emotion that I equate with the town. So that's kind of what I've been doing for the past almost 2 years, well, year and a half with just the pinhole. And it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun. I'm just getting brave enough right now to actually try to ask people for some portraits.
Handheld?
No, I've done a couple handheld, but mostly using my my UltraPod, the little mini tripod. Mostly that's kind of how I've done it.
That's cool.
That's great fun. The folks from America and other places came over to the UK. I've spoken about this before, but hey, you know, repetition and all that. Someone will listen to me eventually. For World Pinhole Day, they all came over to the UK, and I did 12 handheld portraits of them, and I haven't shared them yet. I've maybe shared one, I'm not sure. But it was very quick and easy and dirty photography. You know, I had HP5 in there, and I think I just opened the shutter for a second or so, mm-hmm. and sort of plonked this camera up against their faces, you know, and some came out pretty good, some not so good, but some pretty good. But actually, I had some frames left over, and there was this. I was being watched by this old guy in the corner of the market, and so I wandered over to him and said, "Can I take your picture with this pinhole camera?" And he kind of, "What?" You know, I said, "This is it's a camera. Do you mind?" And before he had a chance to say no, I kind of just shoved it in his face.
Just did it.
So sometimes you just have to go for it, Amy.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Amy, do you find that, so you used to do some portrait and family portrait style work. Do you find it more difficult to do asking people for the portraits with a pinhole camera as opposed to with, you know, your digital setup?
No.
Well, I guess it's different because they're paying you and they know you're there. You don't have to really ask them,
well,
I guess, you know.
Even when I was, you know, just carried my DSLR around, you know, if I said, you know, hey, you know, you want your picture taken, it's almost as if I was finding that people were just really shying away from my DSLR.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's just something about that. I don't know, you know, people, you know, I don't know how they equate one of those big cameras in their face, but I was just finding a lot of resistance, and that's okay. I was nervous anyway, so it didn't, you know, I just kind of run off and hide. But what I'm finding though with my pinhole cameras, that it's such a curious thing for everybody to see because they're not used to that, at least around here. They're really more open to, sure, you can take my picture with it. And I have not been told no yet.
Yeah. It seems like as soon as you say film, people just almost in their minds just associate it with just, you know, you being in your basement with a red light. You know what
right.
I mean? Like making mm-hmm. pictures, and it's like, oh, that's not real photography.
And you must
right.
be and you must be a serial killer because that's how.
Yeah.
Right, but you know what I'm finding is at least the people that I have talked to, they're just curious how the camera works.
Yeah,
and they can't believe that they can get a portrait or whatever, you know, from a piece of wood.
I think it's great that a lot of people don't even realize that. The same technology and their big DSLRs that they have there can be broken down and traced back to exactly what you're doing with just mm-hmm. a box and a hole, you know.
Exactly.
They don't believe you. I mean, some people, I don't even think they believe me at first when I tell them and kind of break it down. They're like, no, that does, you know. It's just kind of like, well, yeah, it is actually. If you want to go look into it, you can figure it out, you know. But
yep, exactly.
Old film cameras are a great conversation starter, and most people I've ever approached, and I've approached loads over the years, have always been more than happy to have their picture taken. And pinhole, just the same. I've done less of that with the pinhole, but really, like you, just sort of starting. And you know, I was shooting with my Ondu in Berlin, and somebody asked me about it, and they said, "What's that?" And I said, "Pinhole camera." And when I started reminding them about it, they said, "Oh yes, I did that at school, you know,
with the oatmeal containers."
Yeah,
right.
But that, and then they go straight into, you know, like, well, that's not a real, like, you can't really be an artist that way, you know, base your art around that, can you? And it's like, yeah, kind of.
I think it's really neat using your pinhole camera, having it with you all day long, and being effectively a documentary photographer with it, because the pinhole is just capturing the world in a whole different way.
Yeah.
I love that image you've got, which, in fact, it might. I need to see more of your project images, but the only one you show on your blog is the one from what I guess is a theater or cinema, and it says Town
right.
on it. Which
mm-hmm.
is
really, yep, yep, that's our local town theater.
And I love the fact that you've got the Stars and Stripes, which I guess is the Stars and Stripes, hanging mm-hmm. off a post in the background underneath, and that's just kind of blurred. And to me, and of course the absence of people, which is pretty typical, you know, with a pinhole, and which I think also adds to the uniqueness of images, and this sums it up properly. I mean, maybe it's this empty where you live in Chile Town, but you know, even with a pinhole camera, mostly folks don't get recorded, do they? You know,
no. And
the
that's
guy, the guy who's fishing stuff out of the bin there. You can't see him,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's. You know, that's been the fun part of it. And I kind of finding, I put a lot of my images on Instagram from my town, but I haven't necessarily marked them. I'm not quite sure how I want to group them all together, but I have been releasing them.
Tag them all. Go and tag them all as Town Project or Chile Town Project or something.
I should. Because I just, you know, sometimes I get so fast there. And
Skippy and Floyd's Barbershop, presumably that's part of your, that's in Chile Town, is it?
Well, actually, that's just inside another town that I'll be starting hopefully soon next to. But I just really like that one, so I threw it out. Sometimes there's just no rhyme or reason to what I throw up on Instagram. But
what do you think about you've been doing this with the Driftwood cameras, or do you only take those out? You know, special cases. That's
well,
not true.
You need to take a step back, because at the moment Amy is talking about her Ondu camera.
Oh, that's right.
And suddenly you're plonking a piece of driftwood in front of people.
Well, actually,
what's the story there? How did you progress from the Ondu to the driftwood?
Where does the
Ondu fit in your life these days?
It still fits in perfectly. I use both those cameras. You know, as long as it's pinhole, it's just kind of whatever film I have. In whichever camera, I keep the Pan F in all my Ondus, and then I keep the either Delta 100 or the Ultrafine Extreme 100 in my driftwood, and that just kind of works for me, so I don't get anything confused.
You have some HP5 as well, I noticed.
Yes, I do. I've been practicing with some HP5 indoors, because I'm getting ready to do a documentary project for a friend of mine. And a lot of that's going to be indoors, so I've been kind of practicing a little bit.
Cool.
So, but yeah, the driftwood came in, and I think, quite possibly, I can't remember which episode, but I thought he was mentioned here on one of your earlier podcasts.
He was, I think.
Yes, yeah. Sergey Lebedev. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I went and checked him out, and boy, I fell in love with his work. He's got some beautiful cameras. And it was right around my birthday and Mother's Day, and so,
and Christmas,
exactly, all
and
those holidays.
shoe buying days for a year. Yeah, you just put a
right.
bit of stake in the bottom, you'll be fine. You don't
right,
need,
that is
don't
right
need
because school is over and they're in sandals and flip flops. So hey, my mom can get a new camera. So I reached out and I purchased one of the driftwood cameras, and it's a different experience. Shooting that camera versus shooting the Ondu, you know, just the shutter itself is different. The winding mechanism, I have to be a little bit more careful, a little bit more slow, because there's no way to wind it back. So if I, you know, if I go past the frame number there, and like I said, just the way the images come out are different. And it's been a real joy to actually use them all to try to figure out which particular camera in which situation is going to fit my needs the best. when I'm trying to tell this story, you know, versus whether it be in town or with this documentary, I'm finding that I'm using the driftwood more inside for whatever reason. I'm not exactly for sure if there's a technical reason why I like those pictures better, but they all serve different needs, and I've used them. And I just recently bought a 6x9, and that's going to be kind of different for me because I'm just used to square. Mm. So that'll be fun.
The driftwood shutter, I mean, the Ondu has that little flip up jobby, doesn't it? The little,
yeah.
Which I had an Ondu for a while and found it was a bit like the Zero image camera. That it's a bit prone to opening in the bag if you're not careful.
So, I had that. Yes, I had that happen one time. didn't realize it.
No, me neither. The driftwood has that same shutter mechanism that Todd has, but similar by the looks of it. Where you just and the mirror, where you just grab hold of the pin and move it around in a circle. That's right, isn't it? That's what it looks like.
Well, that's it has a cap in the front that's held on by a magnet.
Okay.
The circle part that you're seeing there, that's the back that you can move to see the frame number.
Oh, yeah. That's not the shutter. Oh,
that's no, that's okay. That's just where you can see what frame you're on. And then, so there's a circle that you kind of pull out a little bit and then remove.
Cool. So are you developing at home, Amy?
I am. And and I did because of Pinhole.
Yeah,
what I was finding was, you know, after doing a couple months of just pretty much primarily pinhole photography, it was so hard. I was making so many notes to try to teach myself, but then the 2-week developing and getting them back, it was just, it was slowing me down. I kind of felt.
Yeah, sure.
So I sold some of my gear and bought some chemicals, bought a scanner and
just went at it.
And exactly. Yeah.
Have you shot and developed much from the 6x9 yet?
No, I just got it this week, and we've been having some of the remnants of Tropical Storm Gordon, so it's been doing nothing but raining the past few days. Yeah. So I'm hoping tomorrow might be my chance to get out there.
Don't worry, there's another hurricane chugging along. It's heading right for
us.
I
saw
too.
That. Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. That's me. I'm like
Amy. You must live in the part of the world where people just get sucked up into storms, don't you? Isn't it? Where
and houses
yes.
land on top of them with
their
feet.
Exactly. Yes, we are tornado.
Do you have a tornado here. Bunker?
We have a basement. So yeah.
Have you been caught up in tornadoes? I guess you must have been pretty. Where you live, you must have been over the years.
We had one that was fairly close to us last year. But mostly anytime the sirens go off, I immediately get me and the kids. We're downstairs making forts, making games, trying to get their minds off of it. So we have to go down there quite a bit.
You should leave a pinhole camera out.
Hey, I got everything stashed everywhere.
I was looking at the picture you posted fairly recently of, I don't know, it's one of your daughters with some kind of gooey stuff going over the table.
Oh, goodness, the slime, yeah.
The slime. And that's taken with your driftwood camera, isn't it?
Yes.
And looks to have, I don't know if this is typical with the driftwood camera, but it looks to have a nice even coverage on the frame. You know, there's not a great deal of vignetting, not on that particular image anyway.
No, there's not really a lot of vignetting that goes on with this camera that I've noticed versus the Ondu. But I do notice as far as maybe there's a drop off to where things are not so much maybe in focus.
Well,
The
driftwood cameras look like they have a little bit longer focal length than the
yes, yeah.
So that's going to help you a little bit with the vignetting, I think.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. It's some lovely results there, though, and you're using the HP5 again, aren't you? In that.
Yep, that was my practice roll. Doing it indoors in all sorts of light conditions to get ready to take some pictures for my friend, and. So I was making my kids are more willing to let me get that camera out versus any of my other cameras. They're okay with the pinhole cameras and getting their portraits taken, just not any of the others.
Right. Do you, so you have shot with the Delta 100 and developed it at home?
Yes.
So, okay. So I think Andrew, you've used it too. Does anybody
I'm
else find
starting.
That it's curly?
Just starting.
Does yours dry flat when you go to scan it?
Not as much. There's a little bit more curl to that than I think the Pan F.
Yeah, me too. Because I developed some the other day and I went to scan it and I was like, man, I don't remember it being this curly.
I haven't shot. I've just finished a few rolls of Delta 100. I bought some in Photo Impex analog store in Berlin. And I hadn't shot any Delta 100 in years. In fact, you know, I'm not sure that I've ever shot it.
Since they came out with it?
Yeah, maybe. Because I do remember T-Max coming out and the Delta, because all that new technology film, I remember it coming out. And I remember certainly shooting. I've shot with Delta 400 at 35mm film, and I love that. But I've got some 120 now, and so are you talking about it curling sort of edge to edge or lengthways?
Edge to edge.
Like cupping. So
cupping,
get,
I was going to say. Mm-hmm. I would consider it to be cupping, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was just me or if anybody else's.
And how does that compare with, because I've developed some T-Max recently, and I think that seemed fairly flat, although I've not tried scanning it yet. I've just had it hanging up, and then I've filed it, but I didn't notice that particularly.
I don't shoot any black and white in Kodak.
I don't either.
Pretty much the only thing I'm using from Kodak is Portra and Ektar, that's it.
Me too. But I'm mainly an Ilford man. But I had some T-Max. Lorraine Healy sent me some T-Max. Sent me a pack of 5 T-Max 100. So I've been using.
Oh, that. I'm waiting for my film, Lorraine. My 5 pack of film, Lorraine.
I just get all these things keep turning up in the post. You know, pinhole cameras, film.
Humongous pinhole cameras bigger than your face.
Yeah. Maybe
I'm just on the wrong continent. I'm just on the wrong continent, you know. Like,
well, no, doesn't Lorraine live in America?
Yes, she does. I'm just picking.
There we go. That must be my charm.
And actually, I actually have to tell Amy that she sent me a bunch of pictures a while ago, and Amy, you are the first person on my list to receive a set of prints from myself as soon as the weather breaks and it's cool enough for me to actually go out and start printing in my with my new enlarger that I got on my trip up to Erie. You're the first person I'm sending pictures to, because
I'm looking forward to that. Thank
Amy,
you
Amy, are you in any of these? There's a few print swap groups starting in Dustin Cogsdell has one on Facebook.
Yes. I think that's the one I mean.
Participated in that, so we may partner up. Yep. And also Monica, Moni, Crafty Moni, from out in I'm going to say Seattle, that sort of way anyway.
She does the postcard
She does the postcard one.
Oh, okay.
Which is a sort of Elfster, you know, the emulsive Santa Elfster, is that sort of gift exchange website.
Okay.
So postcard exchange, last weekend I was printing some postcards and sent those up, and that's just a wonderful way of sharing your work. I mean, Stephen Ray, that Australian, and by the way, Stephen, I'm drinking a can of Foster's, so I'm sure you'll approve. Australia's favorite beer. Stephen was a bit harsh when I said that. I was being very genuine when I said that. Look, these print swap groups and the postcard groups are just a fabulous way of sharing work that otherwise, for me anyway, just sit in a box, you know, or you might scan stuff and put it on social media or show it to your family now and again.
But I think it's great
to send it to somebody is just fabulous. And so Stephen Ray piped up and said, oh, well, what I'm hearing here, and I can't do the Aussie accent, what I'm hearing here is that it's just a way to get rid of all your old cast-offs and your you know, stuff you don't want. And it's typical bloody Australian, isn't he, really? But yeah, share the prints. And you're in the print swap group, Amy, are you?
Yes. I'll have to check out the postcard one, though. I haven't gotten into that one.
Well, if you get in touch with Monica.
Okay.
And,
she'll send you a link.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love getting work from other artists. I try to get zines, you know, when people have them out, and I love swapping pictures. I mean, I just people's creativity on all sides just really amaze me. And you can learn so much from everybody just by just studying what they do. It's just great.
That and many books, photo books.
Oh, I have a ton too.
I can't get into books. I don't know what it is about it.
You need to read, learn to read first.
Yeah.
You just fall into these, don't you?
They're just pictures though. Why do I have to read just to learn how to do
pictures? Oh, I thought you'd be okay with picture books. What about coloring books, you know, with crayons and things?
Yeah, I like those. Yeah, they're amazing.
I love a good technical book. That pinhole book I'm reading at the moment, you know, the one that talks about all the history and whatnot. That's really good. But I've just got loads and loads of images of books. Oh, photo books. That's the word I'm struggling with. And like you, I don't like to read too much, but like to look at pictures. I was in Berlin. We took in some exhibitions in the Helmut Newton Gallery, and there was some work upstairs. And I saw some Francesca Woodman images for the first time, prints for the first time. And I've got one of her books. I don't know if you're familiar with Francesca Woodman, but she's check her out. She's not a pinhole artist, but some of the work she does is almost pinhole-esque. You know, lots of motion blur of her and bits of self-portraits of her and others, and it's just, she just produces some beautiful work. So Francesca Woodman, which I'm sure lots of listeners out there will be familiar with, but I did have the privilege of seeing some of her work and going to galleries, getting books, doing print swaps. That's where it's at, isn't it, really?
Yeah, that's there's not a lot of galleries around where I live, or, you know, there might be some showings of various artists, but not really in photography.
In Chilitown, aren't you? There must be a cafe somewhere in Chilitown. You just go and talk to them.
I'm hoping. Eventually, yeah. That's what I would like to do with these, just to kind of display them so other people can kind of, you know, just, I don't know what I want them to get from it, but just to view it, just to see it.
Well, they're going to see their town through a different perspective, aren't they? Because they would have never seen, you know,
that's
the cinema photograph.
That's what I'm hoping.
Pinhole camera.
Some people can't appreciate it though. Some people don't like the, I don't know, they just, you know.
Yeah, it's not going to be for everybody, but, you know, hey, if one person, you know, takes something away from it, I'm okay with it.
I took some pictures to a local place in town, and he goes, "These are wonderful, but they're just a little bit out of focus." You know what I mean? I was like, okay, don't worry about it. I just picked them up.
Well, like, I think you need to go to a proper hipster, a proper hipster establishment. Like in Norwich for World Pinhole Day, Alex Yates had organised an exhibition at a funky bar place, and he'd obviously worked his magic because everybody who turned up to the World Pinhole get together submitted a print to Alex on foam board, and he went along to the cafe, and he hung, I guess there must have been about 30 or 40 images from the people who came for the meetup, and they were just hung across one wall on string and pegs, so they were string pegged and they're just hanging there, and it looked great, you know. And
what else do you need? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
so
I think
you just need to pick the right establishment somewhere that maybe is a bit sort of hipsterish.
Well, I'm sorry, Corey. I didn't mean to.
No. Go ahead.
You know, I have two daughters that are really getting into photography, and my 7-year-old, especially my 7-year-old, they only shoot film, and they go on a lot of these photo walks with me around the town. So what I would hope to do is to be able to display some of my stuff and some of their stuff, so that way people can see, you know, this is through my eyes and this is through the eyes of a child, and just a totally different perspective.
Yeah.
And so
that's cool. When I went on a trip at the beginning of August for a couple of weeks, and I had a really, really old digital camera. I mean, it's like 2 or 3 megapixels, one of the Kodak ones, you know, super old. And I was going to put it in a box to donate it. I can't remember what I was going to do with it. My son Henry, who's 6, found it, and he's like, I want to use it. And I was like, okay, whatever, you know. So I put some batteries and an SD card in it, you know, and let him go about it. And I was looking at the pictures the other day. We went to like Niagara Falls and we're driving in our van and like 14-hour road trip.
Right.
And like, you know, and like he took pictures the whole time. And I was just looking at him. I was like, you know, it's just like totally different. You know, it's like they're smaller, they're shorter. Oh. Everything is different. You know, I mean, it's like there's a totally different world. Going to Niagara Falls for him was like this humongous ordeal. You know what I mean?
Right.
And for me, I'm just like, come on, it's hot, you know. You know what I mean? And for him, it's just like amazing, you know what
right.
I mean? So it's
that's
a good idea. That's a really good idea to do that and keep them engaged.
It's absolutely fascinating to see the town through their eyes, because our downtown is where we spend a lot of time, and it's only two blocks long, three mm-hmm. blocks if you count where the post office is at. And so we're there a lot when we go out on our photo walks, and it's just interesting to see through their eyes something that I totally have missed, because you know my adult brain is thinking that things aren't as interesting as what you know they think. It's just fascinating. And
sure.
I love getting her work back, and I just helped her develop actually her first roll of black and white.
Awesome. That's
and
great.
She, my 7-year-old, she loved it. And you know, so I'm hoping to get them back out a little bit more before winter and kind of collaborate with them a little bit and see if we can't come up with something to put in a coffee shop somewhere. Yeah.
Sure, because you guys have pretty intense winters up there, huh, where you're at. Do you get like lake? You're not getting lake effect snow or anything, are you?
Well, no, we don't. We're 3 hours south of Chicago.
That's right.
So we don't get that, but we still do get
pretty
really nasty.
Snow.
Yeah, I mean, it could, you know, we could be sunny one day and 50 degrees and then the next day have a blizzard. So
wow. That's
just
crazy.
Just never know.
Yeah. So how is your locally for you shooting? I mean, you say you have a little downtown area, but do you have access to, I don't know, you know, like hiking trails with waterfalls, or are you kind of just urban, you know, kind of just basic?
So I'd have to travel a little bit closer to some other towns to get some of the hiking. Mostly what I do in my town is just in like, I guess what you'd call like an urban setting. It's just a lot of the buildings. We have an abandoned train station I've shot at quite a bit.
Gotcha.
Well, and we're a river town. So, you know, there's a lot of river images that I'm finding. In fact, that might even spawn its own little project, you know,
because sure.
I can't go without a project. So
yeah.
I'm finding myself more and more down there too. Plus, the girls, they like to collect the shells and stuff when they get done shooting. And so,
cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of about what I get as far as hiking.
Do you find you have too many projects and start getting the project sweats after a while, or are you just fairly relaxed about it?
Yeah, I'm pretty relaxed about it. I would say that probably the hardest part that I have is trying to figure out when a project is done. Most of the times I can just kind of feel it, but I try not to start too many, but I keep the idea. So I've got notebooks full of, you know, some things that I can go off on. And when I feel that it's time, I'll just start a new one. You know,
yeah. Do you find that projects are sort of evolving by accident, because are you deliberately setting out, okay, I'm going to do this, or are you looking back on a body of work and say, actually, there's a theme here. I'm going to take that and run with it.
Mostly they develop by accident. Very rarely do I set out and say, this is what I'm going to do. I mean, the Chillicothe project truly just, it started out as an accident. I was at an event in town with my kids, and it just dawned on me, it's the same thing that I used to do. And so that's kind of how that spawned. And then what I'm finding in a lot of my images here, I find myself drawn to the river a lot. And so that later on may turn out to be something. I'm also finding a lot of flag pictures.
Oh, I love a flag. When I first went to the States in 2012, I've got no end of Polaroid 669 images, Holger images. I was shooting pinhole then, but I didn't take a pinhole to America with me. It was kind of on the back burner at that time. Polaroid was very much there. But the amount of images I've got of Stars and Stripes, you know, fantastic.
Yeah, and that's
very American.
But you know, I shoot a lot of the black and white, so you know, I'm not.
Yeah.
I keep thinking, oh, I'm going to shoot color this time, because that would be really cool. But I love, I just still love my images and in black and white. I can't seem to pull myself away, but I'm finding that I'm just drawn to, I'm going through a bunch of my images and flag after flag after flag. So, you know, maybe someday off the road when I'm a little stuck, I'll just continue on with that a little bit and see.
I think it's just movement though, because like as doing pinhole stuff, I won't even take a picture if I can't have some kind of movement in it. Does that make sense? Like for me,
I self crop
and I'm you know, doing in my mind, just coming up with shots. And if I can't put some kind of movement in or capturing something, I won't even take a picture.
But
sometimes
I think it's very hard to make isn't it really hard to make a pinhole exposure without movement? I guess if you're doing a still life inside the house and it's just like a, you know,
well, I mean, I just mean, in general, you have trees moving and stuff. Yeah. I mean, you're showing movement that way, but I like to get really close to stuff. So kind of, you know, a more normal scene of outdoor, you know, isn't something that I would, you know, maybe not take a picture of just because
it transforms the mundane into the extraordinary.
Sure.
Amy, I was looking at another blog entry, Jack of All, Master of None. And there you have an image of, I don't know, maybe your son on a bicycle.
Yeah, it's my daughter.
And of course it's I think without your daughter on the bicycle, I'd still be drawn to the shot. It's got that sort of classic road disappearing off into the, you know, the perspective.
Right.
And then you've got this recognizable child, you know, on a bicycle. And the composition is perfect. And it, in many ways, it's a mundane picture, but it's the there and now captured, and not just in a frozen moment, but in probably a second of time.
Yeah.
And it's a time bubble, isn't it, really?
You're right.
Kids on bicycles and big wheels and scooters and stuff, man, they make like perfect subject, you know.
Mm-hmm. I need to go and kidnap another child. That's what I need to do.
Well, that's something that I've been also trying to figure out when I make my compositions. Because when I first grabbed a pinhole, I was just shooting everything. Like, oh, this would be cool, this would be cool. And then when I was getting some of my images back, I was trying to figure out, why isn't it speaking to me as well as what I had in my head? Like, I guess wasn't liking it as much. And so I was just studying everybody, everybody I could find. And then I thought, oh, well, maybe in order to tell my story better that I have in my head, I need to try to find something maybe that has some motion.
Yeah.
But I, you know, with this project, I shoot a lot of just buildings, the buildings that we used to have that were very popular when I was younger that are abandoned now. So I have a lot of still lifes, you know, static images. But I also try to balance that out with more movement. And that's why I'm doing some more portraits. I have a gentleman that he was the very first guy I ever went up to, and I was so nervous. But he was an older gentleman, and he was in the park after the carnival, had left town, and he had his metal detector with him. And I just went up to him and asked him, and I thought, this would be cool. And he's like, well, do you want me to stand here? And in that moment, I thought, no.
Swing your potato.
This is one of those things. I'm like, you just be normal. Just do what you're doing. And I'm glad that I made that decision. But, you know, I do think that there is a place for just capturing that moment with no movement whatsoever, because it's that light that hits that film, and that is that moment in time. And then I think then there's that time that calls for the movement. Otherwise, you know, it kind of would be different to me. But that's just, you know, it's trying to find that balance.
Well, that's what brought me into pinhole, I think, and that's why I always try to put some kind of movement in my pictures, is because when I was doing the digital stuff and trying to do the really long exposures with the, you know, with the neutral density, 10 stop neutral densities, and you're doing, you know, minute long exposures, I'm always trying to like put movement into it. It just so naturally just happens with doing the pinhole stuff, you know, because you just naturally have longer.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm struggling with.
Yeah.
I'm struggling with the longer exposures. And not having everything disappear. That's something I'm trying to work on.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about last week. Some people will go to a scene and they'll use a slower film so that everybody disappears. But I stay with, you know, with the 100 speed stuff, because I don't want everybody to disappear. I want them just to disappear just enough to notice that they're there and they're moving, but I don't want them to totally be gone. Yeah, I like that interactive being there with people and showing them emotion and how they're moving around, you know.
Right.
I think both have their places.
Oh yeah, totally. You know,
definitely.
If Amy is photographing Chilitown and
both would work for it, you know.
They would, yeah, because people perhaps aren't used to they're not used to seeing it with no people, you know, at 10 a.m. in the morning. And secondly, the ghost of the images, you know, is also speaking in a different way as well, isn't it? What one is, yes, sort of saying, well, actually, this is kind of empty space, and it's, you know, it's just not always about the people. And the second one is saying, well, here's just this capture of time with people moving, passing through this space, and here's just the image they leave, the echo of who they are being recorded on the film.
Exactly.
Maybe you could start doing like diptychs where you do one with people showing in it and then one with everybody completely gone with an even longer exposure.
Yeah. There's all sorts of projects on.
Yeah.
And how do you see things progressing? I mean, with five kids, you've either got to keep having more, which is kind of difficult.
No.
Or you're just going to move on, and eventually it'll be grandchildren, and you've got a project for life, haven't you, with Pinholes? Now they're used to it. And the fact that they're shooting film as well, which is fantastic.
You have to start doing salt prints at that point.
Well, I kind of figured, like, right now I just have a small area where I have an inkjet printer. So I'm able to, you know, go out, make my exposures, come home, develop, and print that night. And it works for me. But eventually I want to learn how to do all the different various printings. You should start with
contact printing. It's so easy. Just get a lamp and take the light bulb out and get yourself a piece of glass and some paper, and it's, you won't even believe
really
how easy it is to do contact printing, especially if you start doing like 4x5s, you know.
Okay. Why don't you send Amy some of those cute little contact prints from 6x6 negatives?
Yeah, I'll put some of those when I send you.
Okay.
I actually sent, what's his name? He has a show going on. It's called Tiny Landscapes. On Instagram, he's under the Lowest Fidelity, and he started
putting
a show.
On a little exhibition or something.
Yeah, I have pictures in that in that show. I sent him a bunch of contact prints from just negatives, 6x6, 6x12, and everything is contact prints, and they're small, and they're unmounted. They're just like shadow boxed onto the wall. He put them on like a little box, you know.
That'd be neat.
So you have to get really close to them to look at them.
Yeah, that'd really draw the viewer in.
That's so cool. I think I had to send, I sent him 18 separate images, and he just kind of puts them in a cluster of ever how they match up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But contact printing is so easy. But you have a really nice printer, and you have that down. So, I mean, you know, that's...
Yeah, it serves a need that, you know, that I have for right now, because I'll send prints to anybody. I send prints to my family all the time. I'm sure they're getting tired of it, but you know, I just like sharing but eventually when everybody goes,
get yourself a box. You know,
good.
Yes. I don't know if you can get them for inkjet printing, but you can make your own, can't you? You can just run little 5x4. Print out and put a stamp on the back and write on the back to folk, and you know, you don't need, you know, I mean, I use the postcards that Ilford make, and they're fantastic.
But you can get those postcards and just contact print right on those. You don't have to have an enlarger. I mean, if you're doing 6x9, fit right on that card perfectly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So a box of Ilford, they're called Ilford Portfolio
postcards.
Yeah. A box of 100. They're not that expensive, and yeah, contact printing.
Okay.
That was what I did the first time I did that, because someone had sent me a postcard, and I was like, oh, this is cool. So I was like, I'm going to do it. So I bought a box of them and just sent a bunch out to people. And those were just contact prints. I just put the negative right on top of it and just made a contact print and developed it, and, you know, and that was it. I didn't even use an enlarger.
Okay.
Are you shooting any Holgers as well? Because I know you've got Michael Kenner's book.
Yes. Yep. I have, well, I had two Holgas, but my 7-year-old took one of mine, so it's now hers.
Is that what your youngsters are using? Are they using Holgas?
Yeah. So, well, they use, both of them use a point and shoot, just the old Olympus ones that I found, at our thrift store, at our secondhand shop. And, then, my 7-year-old took my Holga, and that's, she thinks that black and white at first was boring, so she only shoots the color film, but now she recognizes that she can develop her black and white. So the Holga is now, she thinks, strictly for black and white. And so, yeah, so she goes and uses that too. So
nice. That's awesome.
So are you making a paper round film?
Eventually, if I can get her to do some chores, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's you can hold that over us, and okay,
that's
you need to clean the living room, and then you can have a roll of ultra fine express.
Wash the car, and you can get a
exactly. See, I always have to be thinking one step ahead, you know.
Right.
I wasn't familiar with that ultra fine extreme 100.
Well, honestly, I wasn't either.
I think it's Ilford, isn't it?
Well, that's what I'd heard. I thought I heard that it was just, what do they call it, rebranded or whatever, Ilford. But I think it was Travis Mort's Killing Dreams on Instagram. He had recommended, they were doing a sale. It was $20. You get 4 rolls of 120. It's ultra fine extreme 400, and then you get 2 rolls of ultra fine extreme 100. So I thought I'd give it a shot because I had to save some money and just wanted to see how it would look. And I don't think it's too bad. I mean,
I know that, listening to the Sony 16, they did a show that was, a 2-part show where they went to the Ilford factory and then they interviewed the Ilford, and they were saying that, you know, like Kent Mirror, and I think Ultrafine were kind of in the same ballpark where they were, like student, they labeled it like student.
Did they mention
student film?
Maybe it's the same. Well, I know, you see, Kentmere were a separate company until 20 years ago, and Ilford took them over.
Right. And maybe that's what it was.
Brought their emulsions in house.
Okay.
And but they were saying that. Well, what they were saying was that the film just has like a little bit less silver sensitivity than like the Ilford films do,
well,
you know.
So well, it could be because the in the UK certainly you can buy Ilford Pan 100 and Ilford Pan 400, which isn't FP4 and it isn't HP5. It's probably something close to Kentmere, but
yeah.
I mean I don't know for sure. Never shot it, but there's one or two outlets over here in the UK that sell Ilford Pan 100, and maybe Ilford Pan 100 or Kentmere 100 is what Ultrafine is, but I've no idea.
Yeah,
maybe.
I have no idea either. I just he had mentioned.
I just shoot it.
Yeah, well, I figured I'd give it a try because you know, again, my kids need stuff. School's starting.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
But you know, I got 4 rolls of 120 for a little under $20, and I thought that was pretty good, just enough to experiment with it to see. And I really think it's a viable film for me that I could go ahead and put in my bag that, you know, I would be able to have pretty much the same developing times. You know, I don't have to mess with anything. My exposure times aren't that long, so I don't know as far as the reciprocity goes. I don't know anything like that. I'm, you know, but it's been doing the job for me, so
yeah,
I'm going to keep it.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that.
What are you developing your films in, Amy? Do you use just one developer or different developers?
No, I use Echo Pro. It has the same developing times as Xtol. It was recommended a long time ago. Well, last year, so it's supposed to be more environmentally
eco-friendly.
Yeah,
well, that's what John. I had a guest on at the beginning of the show. John Cleason. He uses that same line, I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Xtol,
I like it.
Xtol is ascorbic acid based, isn't it? Vitamin C. So that's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Quite
that's what
good.
I use because I have a septic tank. I have to I keep my stop and fix, of course, but I don't worry so much about putting the Xtol down into my septic tank as I do the D76 and some of the other things.
Echo Pro. Okay. Never
heard
of it.
Yeah. It's worked really good for me. I mean, I have not experimented with any of the others. you know, I don't know, chemicals, keeping a bunch of chemicals around the house. I just, anytime you hear that word, but this one has done the job. And so once I get into a routine, I'm kind of afraid to deviate from that because no, I feel like I have a learning process.
Don't worry.
All over
don't
again.
Worry about. Don't worry about that. I mean, I've used a bunch of developers over the years, and it's very tempting to follow trends and follow the latest, trend. Not really the trend, but somebody says, "Oh, you must use this combination." Well, you know, if you've got something that works for you, stick with it because right. I've said it before, and others have said it. Too many variables in your process is just not a good thing.
Right. Yeah. And that's,
I keep coming back to that Xtol D76 mixture. I haven't used a whole lot of different developers, but I've used Diafine and a few other ones. And I'm just like, I just come back to it. I just like the look I get from it, you know? So
anyway, yeah. if you're listening, Matt Jones, this is 60 minutes, so that's stand development. You can stop that
minutes,
now. Okay, 60 minutes and 35 seconds. Maybe we've overrun, but there's the perfect time. So anyone who wants to stand develop, stop now. Okay,
stop now. Well, that's a good point. Amy, if you want to let everybody know where they can track you down to check out your blog and see your work.
Sure. I just I have a link in my profile on Instagram there, and that's probably the easiest place to find it. Instagram at photomom1234. And I'm on Twitter. It's MCHM_photomom. But I'm not on there too much. So I guess Instagram would be the best place for right now. I do have a Flickr account, but I have not been active, so I shall have to get on that, I guess.
Well,
funny you should say that.
We have 17 members in the Lensless Podcast Flickr group. And really, Amy, if you want to see, I'm actually going through it now. Not this minute, but, the last week or so. And I'm being drawn to people's work who maybe I've actually seen on Instagram, but just kind of flicked over. But seeing it on the big screen, because I've got a big desk screen, and then I can start delving into, clicking on their profile and looking at their other work, and I'm just blown away by it. And then I'm inviting folk on who I've seen, and Flickr is just a great place for that. And if you post some of your work in the group page, a Flickr page, then it's just a really good way of just putting your work up there in a gallery. And yeah, the discussions aren't what they used to be maybe 5 years ago, but it's still a wonderful place to view your images.
Okay.
The group is not so interactive, I think, as the Facebook group.
I want to give a shout out to everybody in that Facebook group. I think it's wonderful. Everybody that's been contributing has been putting up some great work. Keep it up. I really enjoy it.
There's lots of new people up, and even the new guys are putting work up there and stuff that's blowing me away, really.
Yeah, there's some great stuff on there. So very good.
That was Andrew's idea, so you can thank Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew.
Corey had none of that before I joined.
I had washed my hands of Facebook years ago. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And when Andrew started talking about doing it, I was like, if you want to, go ahead, but don't count on seeing me there a lot because, but it's not bad. I enjoy going on the show's Facebook page and talking with people and putting up pictures, and they ask me questions. So I do enjoy it.
It's a good place to learn. I mean, like I said, I had a hard time finding places when I first started, and to have, these resources has been great. So I think you guys have done a tremendous job.
Thank you very much.
Wasn't there another resource? Was it Pinhole F295, Curry? Was that someone was mentioning that on one of the threads, and I haven't had a chance to look for it. But was there a forum or something? F295, was that Pinhole focused?
I think so. I can't remember that one. I have. I'm not much of a forum person. I never have been. So I haven't really.
I don't know what it was, but someone out there probably does and can. You can maybe send us an email if I'm just making that up or I've dreamt it, what F295 was.
Uh-huh.
What's our email address, Curry?
The Lenses Podcast at yahoo.com.
So yep. Send us an email. We're saving those up for a special show, I think.
Yeah, coming up quick.
You can catch us on Twitter.
Yep.
And we're pretty, Amy, you know, you say you're not so active on Twitter, but I think we've got about 250, 260 tweets, Twitter people.
Okay.
Following the Lentus, and that's pretty active.
Yeah.
And that's certainly one of the ways that we share the show, and I tend to put some teasers out there for people who are coming on the show just to build up the audience numbers. So you can find us at the Lentus on Twitter as well.
Yeah. And you can find me on Instagram at Pinhole Cannon. Yep. And the podcast has a page on Instagram at the Lentus Podcast, but
Corey's going to be ditching that.
Yeah, I think so, because I'm it seems like the same people who are running checking out my page, the Pinhole Cannon page, are also on the Lentus Instagram page, and it feels like a vicious cycle. I'm like liking their pictures on one page and going to the other one, and then just re-liking their pictures. You know, I feel weird sometimes because I like people's pictures underneath, you know, two different people, and it's kind of
what
I don't
what
know.
I so. Like whichever social media you're using to display your images, and I think this is probably where Flickr comes into its own. Because I take the time to deliberately go into Flickr and look at things, I'm tending to make comments on people's images as to why I like them. And I think people appreciate that. They appreciate someone, rather than just saying like, you know, it's easy to do, isn't it? Take some time and say, look, actually, what is it about that image that really speaks to me and why? And people love that, you know, and I think so. Take some time to say something about someone's work, and it'll pay back in spades.
And don't be afraid, on that same note, negatives and positives, you know, because, you know, don't I like it when people say this works, but, you know, that's kind of weird, or this could have been cropped out. I mean, I don't take any offense to that. I don't know if other people might. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. But, you know, you have to be able to look at it from all sides, because, I mean, it's just trying to help everybody grow and get better, and strengths and weaknesses, you know. So.
Absolutely.
But, interacting and talking is the way to go. That's why I'm kind of getting burned on Instagram. You know what I mean? It feels like I'm just scrolling through and just, you know,
like.
Yeah. So, but Amy, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. I really do.
It's been great.
We got to watch out for Andrew. He gets kind of chatty sometimes. So we got to,
did you listen to Justin Quinnell? Amy, I don't know if you had a chance, Amy, to listen to Justin Quinnell a few shows back.
Yeah, I got to listen to almost all of it.
Wow. We I don't think we had a word between us the whole hour.
That's okay. I always appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk about photography and pinhole photography specifically. Yeah. So,
well, we'll have you back.
Oh, please do.
Yeah,
I'm definitely. Here.
I think when I first reached out, you said, okay, I'm sure I'll have a whole lot to say. But
well,
there you go.
Not a whole lot about me, but I do.
That's all right. I mean,
I appreciate it.
We're all in that boat. We're all just pinhole photographers who enjoy doing what we're doing. And I was talking to Andrew about this recently. I think I told him, I said, I wish someone else would start another pinhole podcast, because I don't really listen to much film photography podcast, because I'm not really much into the lens side, you know. So I'm still looking for something that holds my interest as far as, you know, just topics.
I listen to most of them.
Well, you do a lot of lens photography, though. I don't really do any.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, man. I do a lot of lens photography. But you know, I think we deliberately shied away from talking too much about what's in the news, didn't we? And you know, and you'll hear the same stories pop up on different folks' podcasts. So you just pick one you enjoy and listen to it. Probably otherwise you'll end up spending all your time listening to podcasts. Unless you've got a job that allows you to do that, and you can just be doing other things, you know.
Yeah. We definitely enjoy just talking to people who enjoy doing pinhole photography. I mean, plain and simple, that's That's what we're getting around to.
I think that's one of the best things about this podcast, because it allows you an insight into somebody else's process and their creativity and what they're thinking, because there's no one way that is the right way. And it's always really nice to be able to be opened up to other avenues of how they got to the process and their final image. So that's what I think, makes this one stand out. So,
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And on that note, I think I'm going to go and eat my curry.
Enjoy.
Yeah, your Foster. He's going to have a Foster's and curry. So
no more Foster's.
Don't walk within 2 blocks of his house the rest of the weekend if I were you.
I did make the mistake of tweeting that I was drinking this Foster's, and Todd Schlemmer said, "Yeah, it'll make you fat." I know. I said, I'll just have the one. It's okay. So cheers, Todd. Thanks for raining on my parade.
Yeah. And Amy, have a great weekend.
Thank you,
too, guys. Everybody has a great weekend. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks. Bye.
Bye, everybody.